Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined today by Tri-State's best pinch hitter, Chris Bradley. Chris, how are you today?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. This is an early edition of Tri-State at the Plate. Usually we record late at night. This one's taking place early in the a.m. today.
Yeah. Sorry, the coffee ready to go.
Sorry to drag you out of bed at this ungodly hour.
That's all right. I have to act like an adult, so I'm used to it.
So before we get started about the goings-on in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, our topic of the day, I want to talk about something that, I mean, it kind of made me laugh, and I feel bad that I was laughing about it, but not really, because it's kind of amusing. But Jesus Montero was rehabbing with the Aqua Sox, and prior, his season's shut down now, so he's not playing any other games for Seattle this season, but prior to him being shut down, there was an incident that took place where he was sent an ice cream sandwich from a Seattle Mariners, so from someone within his own organization, from a Seattle Mariners cross-checker named Bert Bacala, I believe is how his name is pronounced.
Former blogger, too, I believe.
Oh, really? That's kind of interesting. So, apparently the whole incident started with Bacala telling Montero that after he was done coaching first base, he needed to hustle off the field. And that led to a little chirping back from Montero, which led to Bacala sending him an ice cream sandwich in the dugout.
Actually, I heard it wasn't a sandwich. I heard it was one of those little helmets with the ice cream.
Was it really?
Yeah, I heard, because there was some discussion about that on Twitter. You know, the baseball perspectives guys go on and on about what's a sandwich or not. Well, apparently it wasn't an ice cream sandwich. It was one of the helmets with the soft serve that you get in the game. And apparently they still qualify as a sandwich to them, so there's that.
That is some great analysis on the ice cream by those guys. So Montero did not take too kindly to receiving some ice cream in the dugout after some of his weight issues that took place at the beginning of the season. So apparently he, and again, this is all just everything I've collected from reading the articles and reading people's accounts on Twitter, but apparently he stormed out on the field with a bat, just cursing at Bacala
in the ice cream.
Bat in the stands. Oh, he had the ice cream in hand. He was not going to leave the ice cream to go to waste. And and apparently, you know, I mean, their family friendly environment in minor league baseball. Nobody was very pleased with the language that he was addressing to Bacala in the stands. So.
Yeah.
Kind of a zany incident. We've had some zany incidents between, you know, Alex Guerrero's ear getting bitten off this season. This one was kind of zany, though. I have to say, I was kind of, I would probably put this top one or two.
That one's pretty strange, but this, I mean, just the fact that he was a member of his own organization, you know, his own, just, why would you attack your own player? Like, you have him on a fantasy team and you're pissed? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's some kind of beef between Bacala and Montero, because you don't just do that for no good reason. You know, like, they have to have some kind of history, you would think. There has to be some kind of interaction between the two of them that just wasn't kosher prior to that going on. That's such a weird thing. Such a weird... And then, so, if you go read the article on ESPN, they get a statement from Bacala after the whole incident. And he said, you know, you can't trust everything that you read. This isn't, you know, this isn't the way that it went down specifically or whatever. And, like, I just have a hard time understanding how this could be taken in any other light other than Bacala was just kind of being a dick. And that's,
yeah, he was being a complete douche. Like, there's really no excuse for that. Like, hecklers at games are the worst. And we were at Williamsport the other night. There was a heckler in the stands, and she was, like, obviously very inebriated. And like you said, these are family-friendly environments. You know, she was screaming, yelling, no swear words or anything, but still, it was highly annoying to the people around. And it's
right.
Just, you know, there's really, even if it was misconstrued, even slightly, it still was not appropriate for that venue.
Right, well, and that's the thing I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, what did you happen to overhear him talking about how hot it was outside and you're sending him ice cream because of that? How am I misconstruing what you've done in this situation? That's just like Bacala just a complete saving face kind of move there. Yeah, oh yeah, it was just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, when he gets fired, that'll be saving face.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a cross-checker for that organization very much longer. Have a sneaky suspicion.
The thing about baseball is, though, these guys find jobs within baseball again. Like, for example, I believe Dave Littlefield scouts for the Indians. Like, would you... How does Jason feel about that? I'd like to know.
Oh, jeez, yeah. That, I can tell you how I feel about that as a Pirates fan. Boy. Good luck with that, Cleveland.
Oh, excuse me. He's no longer with the Indians. He is with the Cubs now.
With the Cubs now?
Yeah. So he gets to hang out with Professor Jason Parks.
Yep, and...
heads, because Parks being somewhat bright and Littlefield being not very bright.
Yeah, that'll be entertaining. Good luck with your next John Van Benskoten in Chicago there.
Yeah, or Brian Bullington.
Jeez. All right, well, enough about talking about Jesus Montero and Dave Littlefield. We spent entirely too much time on them this morning. So let's move on to the goings-on. We're going to be talking today about what's happening in Pittsburgh as we're going down the stretch, what's happening in Cleveland as we're going down the stretch, and we're going to be talking about the two-knuckle challenge in Erie, which... Talking about just weird topics today, this is why I say Jesus Montero might be like number two on the list of weird things that happened, because Greg Coleman, well done, sir, well done. So before we get to that, though, we're going to be talking about the Pirates, so let's start off, the Indians, so let's start off with Cleveland today. Now, 40-man rosters, so rosters have expanded.
At midnight. Today, well, earlier today, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so over the next few weeks, you're going to be seeing some names that you haven't traditionally seen, because you're going to have a whole list of players that are eligible to be active on the 25-man roster every day. So just kind of keep that in mind as you're watching baseball. If you're starting to see some names pop up that you might not necessarily recognize, it's probably because there's some... eligibility rules as far as players on the 40-man roster are concerned. So basically, managers have some flexibility, which has always seemed kind of odd to me. I don't know how you feel about 40-man rosters, but like during the most important time of the season, so we're coming down the last 25, 26 games of the season, now all of a sudden there's just this influx of players that you can kind of cycle in and out of your active lineup every day. And it seems like a really odd time to get to be able to do that.
Yeah, I've always thought it was bizarre. But, I mean, I guess the other side of that is that you get these players that are, most of them are prospects, or, you know, are pretty much fringe, ready to make the leap, but just not, you know, they don't want to waste the roster spot on them during the season because of, you know, timing issues and whatnot. Another, you know, they need to get more polished, but... You know, they're like wild cards. I mean, look at Soler getting called up the other day. I mean, he's already mashing because, you know, pitchers don't really know what to do with him. But when they do figure it out, I'm sure he's going to probably slow down a little bit. Same with Baez, you know, those guys. Yeah, sure, they've got great upside, but if the pitchers make the adjustments and they don't, they're just going to be another, you know, 200 strikeouts, 30 home run guy.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I guess... I was talking about this the other day with someone, and they said, well, how would you rather, you know, like, what would you do differently? And I guess if I were going to do it differently, like, in just a perfect world, if I could just change anything, if you're going to have rosters just, if roster expansion like this is something that you're just going to do regardless, and you're not getting rid of it, I would think that it would make more sense to do it at the beginning of the season, because then I think... Right, managers, you have to be a little more, like, I guess, just judicious about who you throw out there. You know, like with your pitchers, like the innings that you're going to burn with guys. You know, like, you're going to be really careful at the beginning of the season because you don't know whether your season's over or not. You know what I mean?
That's right. And also another side of that, too, is, you know, watch your fantasy team, because, you know, your favorite player may be getting a lot more rest.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. Doing it at the end of the season when all these teams are in pennant chases, I don't like it. It feels almost disingenuous to me. where, you know, the teams that are out of it, that have nothing to play for, I mean, they can throw out whoever they want out there. It doesn't matter. But, like,
play lineup.
Right, yeah. Like, a team like Pittsburgh, I mean, they can give some guys some rest. Like, I mean, if Pittsburgh is getting just the doors blown off them, and for whatever reason they have, I don't know, maybe they just have, like, Casey Sadler on the active roster for the day, they can go burn an inning or two of Sadler in a total blowout just to let him get some work in. And those innings are meaningless, and it doesn't matter. You know, like, if you go look at, again, like, some of those teams who are just completely out of it, they can go throw guys that they typically wouldn't throw because they know that there's no chance that they're making the playoffs or, you know,
it's not going to affect their playoff chances in any fashion.
So I guess, I don't know. It feels very, like I said, disingenuous to me to have it happen at this point in the season, I guess, but... It is what it is, I suppose. You know, there's nothing
changing. We don't make the rules.
Yeah.
Then.
But just a heads up that over the next few days, be looking for some names that maybe you haven't seen traditionally throughout the course of the year.
Digging out your copies of Baseball Prospectus.
Just see where they fall. Yeah.
Yep.
So with Cleveland, they've had a couple transactions over the last few days. Josh Outman was traded to the Yankees for a player to be named later. And then a few days ago, the 29th, Yan Gomes was activated from the 7-day concussion DL, which, I mean, that's huge for Cleveland going down the stretch because Gomes has just been on fire these last few months of the season. He's just been crushing the ball. And he seems to have no residual effects. Last night he was DHing, and I think he had 3 hits last night. So Gomes seems to be back on track. The Indians also signed Russell Branyan to a minor league contract, which I'm sure has...
What year is it again?
1999? I don't...
2003? Like...
I'm sure Jason is just thrilled about that.
I'm sure he's digging out the old Russell Branyan jersey, probably.
Yeah.
Or jersey.
So Russell Branyan signed to a minor league contract, and then... Jason Giambi and Ryan Rayburn are both, they're on rehab assignments. I believe they're both assigned to Akron, so they're both rehabbing down there.
Jason Giambi's been rehabbing all year, hasn't he?
Yeah, Giambi hasn't taken in a bat this season for Cleveland, I don't think. I'll double check that just to make sure, though.
He's going to be the next great player manager.
Yeah.
Along with Manny Ramirez.
So, Cleveland... After last night, now Cleveland was rained out last night, so they're going to have to make up the game with Kansas City at a later date. But after last night, they're 3.5 games back of Kansas City and 3 games back of Detroit. So we're down to, like I said, the last 27 games or so of the season. 7 of those games are against Detroit, so they have a 4-game series starting tonight at home, and then a 3-game series at Detroit starting September 12th. And then they have 3 games left against Kansas City at home starting September 22nd. They also have to finish the game from last night previous to the 22nd's game. So last night's game was suspended. And just the way that schedules work, they aren't going to be able to finish it in Kansas City. They're going to have to finish it prior to that homestand in Cleveland. So... Let me ask you this. How do you think Cleveland fares over the last month or so of the season? Do you think they have a playoff spot in their future?
I think if some things break right, I mean, it's tough because they don't really have the pieces needed. I mean, we discussed this last time I was on the podcast, I believe. I mean, they have a great lineup. I just, you know, their starting pitching is a little suspect to me. And, I mean... I think the only thing that helps them get a playoff spot is if Kansas City really does turn into a Kansas City of old this month. you know what I mean?
Right.
The Kansas City we're used to. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Kansas City's finally figured it out. I don't know. But, I mean, I believe in our preseason picks. I picked Cleveland for a wild card spot, I think. Yeah, I think I picked them second in that division in a wild card spot. So, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, they're 3 games out of the wild card. They have Oakland and Detroit, and then Seattle's half a game back of those two teams. And then you have Cleveland at three games. And, you know, Cleveland's had a great season. They really have. Their offense has been good. And their pitching has been not as good as you would have thought. I think largely in part to their key cog, Justin Masterson, just not having a good season at all. And I think down the stretch it is going to be hard for them to cover up all of the shortcomings that their rosters had all season. So you look at this team and you look at the money that they've spent. You know, they went out and signed Nick Swisher, who's now on the DL with his bad knees. And, you know, Michael Bourne has finally gotten healthy. But, you know, there was a good chunk of the season where you were playing without Bourne or, you know, with Bourne being kind of hobbled. And I think when you're getting down to this last, you know, month of the season or so, you know, three games is a lot to overcome when you have teams like Oakland, Detroit, and, you know, Seattle's been playing phenomenal baseball lately, too.
Yeah, which I think everybody didn't expect because, you know, when somebody goes up and spends that much money, they usually flop miserably.
Right, yeah. But then, so then you factor in, you know, kind of like you said, you have Kansas City thrown into that mix where now all of a sudden Kansas City's playing great baseball. You know, maybe you weren't necessarily expecting that at the beginning of the season, but they're atop that division and they're playing really well right now.
Alex Gordon for MVP.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's get Mitch Williams all fired up about that one.
Yeah, I mean he's pretty good, but I don't know if he's MVP worthy.
I tweeted because I was curious the other day. I tweeted Ben Jedlicek just to ask how good he is, and he says the defensive metrics hold up for Alex Gordon. Now defensive metrics are kind of interesting because they can kind of fluctuate more than your offensive numbers tend to year to year.
Yeah, they're a little bit more theoretical.
Right. But I mean, that's Alex Gordon, if you look at his numbers for his career, has been a solid defensive player, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's just playing out of his mind defense this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken him 9 years to figure it out. 2005, what was he? Second draft pick, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I think Justin Upton went first, I believe. And then you've got Seattle. Yeah, Justin Upton, Alex Gordon, and the immortal Jeff Clement.
Oh, Jeff Clement.
Actually, it's funny because Wikipedia, that's your Kutch got picked too. Wikipedia has the gold outline for All-Stars. And let's see, in the top 10, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 All-Stars, and then you have Jeff Clement, Wade Townsend, Mike Pelfrey, and Cameron Maben. And then at 11, you have Kutch.
Good pick for us.
Yeah, seriously.
Glad he fell there.
Yeah, either that or not much after him except for Ellsbury.
Yeah. So, last night, as I touched on earlier, last night's game was suspended in the 10th after a Lonnie Chisenhall go-ahead double. And Chisenhall drove in two, so Cleveland is technically up 4-2 in this game right now.
It's on pause. They put the PlayStation on pause.
Yeah, until the 22nd. So that got me thinking because I have Lonnie Chisenhall in one of my fantasy leagues. A longtime dynasty league, and it got me thinking about Lonnie Chisenhall going forward. Do you think Lonnie Chisenhall is a contributor for Cleveland going forward? Do you think he's a major league caliber player, or do you think he's going to kind of turn back into that Lonnie Chisenhall that Cleveland fans have seen for some, probably like the last 3 or so years, where he's just a frustrating, almost a Matt Laporta type player where he's going up and down like that?
He's their Josh Harrison, I would say. And, he's having a great year, so I guess you can ride it until it ends.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he's legitimate, though? Do you think he's...
I think next year he starts for him. I think he is pretty legit. I mean, that's, you know, I'm not really basing that on any evidence besides how well he's doing right now, but I guess we'll see, you know?
Yeah, I mean... He's been more selective at the plate this season. He's walking a considerable amount more. There's nothing, you know, he's striking out at about the same rate that he has since he's entered the majors, around 18% of the time. So it's not like there's any dramatic change there. His ISO, you know, there's nothing off. You know, his BABIP's a little bit higher this season at 342, which you're probably not going to see, which is probably why his average is hovering around 300.
He will get smacked with aggression.
Right.
The regression monster will come for him.
But even though
that high of a BABIP, because that's not normal. But then again, it takes a lot of plate appearances to fully calculate BABIP. So, I mean, it could just be an aberration. I think he might. I mean, you say he's walking a little bit more. I think he might be listening to his hitting coaches, which is probably a good sign. I mean, it's possible. Batters can be fixed.
Right. Well, and you know, that kind of, even if his average does dip, you know, so he's hitting 296 right now, but he has a 359 on base percentage. You know, that's about, you know, you're looking at that like 60 points higher than his batting average. You know, it's not outstanding. But it's a solid on base percentage.
Above average, though. It's still, you know, above the league average anyway.
Right. So you look at that. The only thing I will say, his biggest, I guess, the biggest weakness in his game right now, if you were looking at it, is his defense is just awful. And Cleveland has a whole group of players who defensively they don't really know what to do with. You know, like they tried Carlos Santana at third base and it got to the point where that just wasn't working, so they slid him over to first, and now they have, you know, Chisenhall over there, but Chisenhall's defense hasn't been great over there, and I think that's going to be their biggest question, is defensively, how much can they tolerate, you know, like they're rotating guys in and out of, you know, the DH, first base, third base, catching positions like that, and I think their biggest question is just how bad of a defense can we tolerate from these players?
Yeah, I know. It's like watching Pedro. It's
pretty Yeah. Neat. Well, and it's funny that you say that, because that's what Lonnie kind of reminds me of, is Cleveland's Pedro Alvarez. Now, obviously, Chisenhall doesn't have the
raw power.
Right. But, you know, he's one of those tantalizing players. And that's my biggest fear for Chisenhall, was that he was going to turn into like a Matt LaPorta, where he wasn't going to contribute at all. So, I mean, I guess if he turns into a Pedro Alvarez, where at least he's contributing some of the time, and then some of the other time he's just a totally frustrating player to watch.
He looks lost.
Right. I mean, maybe you can deal with that if you're a Cleveland fan. I don't know. I wouldn't wish it upon them. I wish he would just be like a more, like, if you're going to be like a 260 hitter, just be a 260 hitter all season, instead of being a 200 hitter and then a 300 hitter the other part of the time. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Chisenhall, I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter for his whole career, but
no. I think he far outpaced his projections for this year, which is, you know, surprising. But so like so is Josh Harrison. So like right. I said, it could be, you know, part aberration, but I feel like maybe something's clicked. He won't become a complete player, but he'll definitely become more serviceable.
Yeah, I mean, if Chisenhall turns into a 260 hitter with a 330 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Cleveland fans have to feel pretty good about that.
I'd feel pretty good about that if I was a Cleveland fan.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Matt LaPorta at that point, and that's a good thing.
I think Matt LaPorta is in Double A somewhere. Did he retire?
He was playing in the Mexican League earlier this year, and that was the last I'd heard of him.
I believe he still is. He is best known as the bust in the CC Sabathia trade.
Yep. And Michael Brantley will forever be known as the player to be named later. So continuing on with Cleveland, Trevor Bauer threw 5 2/3 shutout innings on Saturday. And Bauer and Chisenhall to me, and I guess I'm looking at this through the lens of, you know, like I'm a Cleveland fan, but I watch more Pirates baseball than I do Indians baseball. So I kind of look at everything through the lens of an outside fan or a casual fan, I guess. But Trevor Bauer and Lonnie Chisenhall, they seem like very similar type players to me. like a lot of fun to watch sometimes, and then just completely infuriating to watch other times. And Saturday was one of the perfect examples of how you can love Trevor Bauer and just hate Trevor Bauer all at the same time. Because he loaded the bases in the first inning with no outs on Saturday, and then somehow managed to work his way out of that jam to throw 5 2/3 shutout innings. And he loaded the bases again. I think it was in the fourth inning he had the bases loaded again and, like, just squeaked out of it again. And, I mean, he just has... He has phenomenal stuff, you know, he's throwing like 96-mile-an-hour fastballs out there, like tight breaking balls and stuff, but
yeah, man. I mean, it was him and Garrett Cole from UCLA, they were like 1-2.
Yeah.
I believe I read somewhere that the Pirates were looking at both before the Diamondbacks snagged Bauer.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh would like Cole more just because of his build, you know, he was the bigger guy, and
as a better major leaguer, I mean,
right,
than Bauer. But I mean, Bauer has allegedly threw faster. But I don't know. I mean, Cole can throw pretty hard.
Yeah. But so watching Bauer as kind of an outside Cleveland fan, his delivery seems to kind of definitely have evolved from when he first came into the league. I mean, when he first came into the league, you know, I remember a lot of moving parts, you know, like elbows and legs and everything kind of going everywhere.
His lineup was kind of old-timey.
Yeah, right. And now it's much tighter. It's much more efficient. It kind of reminded me of, do you remember the old pitcher in Major League, Eddie Harris, the guy who put snot on the ball?
Yeah.
With a little jalapeno under his nose? Yeah. Yeah.
You try to tell me Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So his delivery kind of reminds me of that, where it looks like a delivery from a guy who is playing baseball in a movie that's trying to look like a guy who's playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely much more efficient. I mean, everything is a lot, like I said, a lot tighter, and it's not, you know, like, again, it's not affecting his velocity, because he was pumping 96 on Saturday, so. But as someone, again, who only watches a handful of Cleveland games a year, I've definitely noticed a big change in Bauer's delivery. But so you watch that game in Bauer's start, and, you know, Cleveland ended up squeaking it out. But Kansas City, I don't want to say Cleveland squeaked it out, because Kansas City basically gave Cleveland that game. I mean, they left 16 runners on base. You know, like I said, they left the bases loaded multiple times. At the end of the game, I believe Kansas City had a runner on second, I want to say it was. But they left Moustakas in the game against the lefty with Josh Willingham on the bench. And it turned out Josh Willingham had a sore back, so he couldn't even come in to pinch hit. So they had to let Moustakas go in and hit against the lefty. I mean, a lot of things worked in Cleveland's favor that game. I don't think it was necessarily Cleveland won as much as it was just Kansas City left opportunities out there.
Could have been Joe Boo, could have been Jesus Christ. We don't
know. There was some good juju out there for Cleveland that game. So one of the things though that I've really been itching to talk about for the last few weeks is Wade Davis. And so we had a perfect opportunity to talk about Wade Davis with Cleveland finishing up Kansas City. And how good is Wade Davis? I mean, I think he's been the best relief pitcher in baseball. If Wade Davis got saves, I mean, you would be talking about him like he was Craig Kimbrel this season.
Been pretty phenomenal, that's for sure.
But if you're a team like the Royals, so Wade Davis he's going to hit arbitration next season. And this season he made $4.8 million. If you're Kansas City, can you stomach paying a relief pitcher like $5.5 million? A guy who's going to throw maybe 60 innings for you a season? Do you think that's a move that Kansas City has to make because of how good Wade Davis has been?
That's tough, because I mean, I wouldn't pay him before I paid James Shields, because you know how volatile relief pitching can be.
Right.
I mean, he's worth about 2.5 wins this year. I mean, paying him $5 million a year would be a bargain at that. But he's still a relief pitcher, which there's still a chance of him just to get, you know, beaten on like a pinata. Whereas you've got Big Game James, who I don't think they'll re-sign, but I'm just making the point that I would sign a good starting pitcher before I sign a relief pitcher for that much money. I mean, leave that up to the teams who really make who are known to make those kinds of mistakes, to sign relief pitchers for ungodly amounts of money. The Red Sox, the Yankees, etc. Like, I wouldn't give them that much money.
Yeah, I mean, so let me throw some numbers out there just to kind of put things into perspective of how good Wade Davis has been this season. So he's thrown 60 and a third innings this season. His K per nine is 13.43. So he has, in his 60 and a third innings, he struck out 90 batters.
That's a lot.
Where was it? Okay. His left on base percentage. So get this. Once a runner gets on base, his left on base percentage is 90.6%. If you get on base, you do not score against Wade Davis. Like, it's...
That's just phenomenal.
That's ridiculous. I don't even... Boy. Like, his best season prior to that, so 2012, when he was with the Rays coming out of the bullpen, his left on base percentage was 81.4. So he's leaving 10% more runners on base than 2012.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's really strange to see the disparity in the numbers, because last year, well, they tried him out as a starter last year, didn't they?
Right, yeah, last year they were kind of bouncing him around, and he was in the rotation for a period of time, and...
He was still worth close to two wins last year, despite those gaudy, or not gaudy, ungodly, ugly numbers of the ERA and his FIP, both way too high, but this year they're microscopic. Even his FIP, which kind of suggests that it's not like smoke and mirrors, he's actually pitching quite well.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I think if you're Kansas City, you have to re-sign Wade Davis. But kind of like you said, with the volatility of bullpens, I mean, look at Justin Wilson's season last season and look at his season this season. I mean, I don't know. Wade Davis does have one prior season of relief pitching experience where he was primarily a relief pitcher that kind of suggests that he will be a lot better as a relief pitcher, but that's a lot of money to sink into a guy who's going to throw you 70 innings a season, even if they are 70 phenomenal innings like that.
See, I don't know that much about the Kansas City Royals payroll, so I'm looking it up right now. In 2014, their opening day payroll was $92 million, so that's way up. You can tell when they started to get desperate to win while Dayton Moore, because in 2011 it was $38 million, and then it went up to $64 million, then $81 million, and now it's $92 million.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing the ownership, if what's his name, Dayton Moore, prods his owner to re-sign Wade Davis, you know, I feel like he would probably shell out the cash just so they can win, you know? And also they're saving money because they don't have to try and compete with Alex Gordon on the free agent market, because he's voluntarily picking up his option, even though he could probably get paid a buttload of money elsewhere.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe they have to re-sign him because of that. You know, that does open up some room on the payroll, being able to save the money with Alex Gordon, especially after the year he's having.
It'll be interesting to see. If I'm a Cleveland fan, I suppose I probably wouldn't want to see Wade Davis back, but like you said, also, if it comes down to Wade Davis or James Shields, I guess I'd rather see the guy that throws one inning an outing against me instead of James Shields, who's going to throw seven or eight quality innings. So.
Yeah, well, and plus James Shields is not going to stay in Kansas City. I think Yankees, Red Sox, teams with a lot of money that can pay pitchers an ungodly amount of money are going to come knocking, because it's going to be him and Lester. And I think those are the two biggest pitchers on the free agent market after this year. And it's, I mean, you know they're going to get paid a king's ransom, both of them.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, teams just pay pitchers an ungodly amount of money. I just don't know why, because they're so fragile. You know, they could get injured tomorrow, and then you're wasting all that money. I think, speaking of Kansas City, a good example of that is Gil Mesh, even though he gave that money back, which I thought was awesome. He got injured, you know, and he's like, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to forego the remaining amount of money in my contract, because it was guaranteed, and it was a lot of money. I don't remember the exact amount, but it was a lot. So I don't really think every player has that kind of personality, though. You know?
No.
I know I wouldn't. If I had like millions and guaranteed money and I was able to sit on my ass, I would totally do that.
I would be rehabbing the hell out of it every day. You would get the best rehabber on the planet.
Yeah. You'd see me throwing ice cream cups at obscure minor league city.
Yeah. So last thing I want to touch on with Cleveland before we move on to Pittsburgh, and I feel like you have to talk about this anytime you're talking about the Cleveland Indians, though, is Corey Kluber, the Klubot, who has just been, he's been a revelation for Cleveland this season, and he's been a big part of the reason why Cleveland is still hanging in this playoff hunt the way that they are. Corey Kluber, he's not going to win the Cy Young. I feel very certain that he's not going to win the Cy Young, but I think you have to, at least if you're going to have a legitimate conversation about who deserves the Cy Young, I think you have to have Corey Kluber in that conversation. I mean, yeah. I know the sports writers aren't going to pay attention to Corey Kluber.
Yeah, he's,
but
he's
they
not,
should.
He's not a King Felix.
Right. And that's who's probably going to win it because he has the name and he has the track record, and you know, and Seattle is a competitive team.
He's not pitching like crap though either. I mean, they've both pitched extremely well this year. So I think Kluber deserves it. But I don't think he's gonna win it, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I mean, if you go take a look at Corey Kluber's numbers, I mean, they're pretty phenomenal, and it's interesting because a lot of them are outliers. I mean, this is by far Corey Kluber's, you know, the best season of his career, and all, and I understand that as well, and that probably a lot of that goes into why someone else will win the Cy Young. Aside from just their great performance. But, I mean, Corey Kluber, he has a 2.5 ERA right now, and his FIP is actually lower than that. Like, if he had a better defense behind him, his ERA would be better.
Yeah. He had to suffer through half a year with his Drubal Cabrera, though. So.
Right, yeah, I mean, his Drubal Cabrera, Carlos Santana at third base.
Chisenhall at third base.
Chisenhall's there now, yeah. Like, imagine if you would have just plugged, like, a Lindor in there from the beginning of the season. With that great defense to save him a couple runs.
That was one of my predictions that went wrong. I thought they were going to call him up immediately, and he has yet to get called up. But
yeah,
like you said, imagine if they did. I mean, then they'd have a couple more runs saved. They would probably have much better defense. But
right.
What can you do? I'm not the GM of the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. But so you look at Corey Kluber this season. He's had 28 starts this season. In his 28 starts, he's given up 4 or more runs only 4 times. So, for comparison's sake, Felix Hernandez has done that twice. So, in Felix Hernandez's, all of his starts this season, he's given up 4 or more runs twice. So,
and he's pitching in Safeco, too, which...
Which probably helps, yeah.
Definitely helps.
Yeah.
Not too shabby of a defense behind him either, with Brad Miller, you know, Cano.
Yeah, and now they got Austin Jackson in the outfield. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, like I said, I understand that Corey Kluber isn't going to win the Cy Young, and if you're going to have a Cy Young conversation, though, he should be in the conversation.
I agree, and I mean, he's going to receive some votes. Probably like Homer votes, you know, people around the Cleveland area.
Right, yeah.
But are anti-Seattle, which I can't really imagine anyone being anti-Seattle. How do you hate Seattle?
Yeah.
Minus their front office, I mean.
Right.
It's just amazing to me that Jed, however you say his last name, got a contract extension. Because that guy just seems like, he seems like the racist uncle that comes to Thanksgiving. He seems like that kind of guy. Like, seriously, I mean, just looking at him and listening to him, he sounds like that kind of guy. And I don't know. He got hired under this, you know, great, like, oh, I'm gonna bring in numbers and scouting and make them, you know, marry each other and all be shiny and happy and rainbows, and you know, come to find out, I think it was beginning of this season, the revelation that, oh, he doesn't actually care about any of that stuff. He doesn't care about sabermetrics, he doesn't care about, you know, he doesn't listen to his staff, he's all about just the eye test, and he just, I know, I hate to cast aspersions or, like, you know, judge somebody, but he just looks like that kind of guy, and he sounds like that kind of guy. But he's getting, he got a contract extension based on, you know, a team that is fighting for a wild card spot. I mean, they're not absolutely trouncing the AL West like everybody thought they would. You know, they thought those young pitchers would come up and they would have a solid rotation. Well, that hasn't panned out. Their lineup is good, but I mean, you don't really have any power from Cano. You get more power from Dustin Ackley than you have from Cano.
Right. He got a contract extension basically because he signed Robinson Cano. That was why he got a contract extension.
Sold tickets, that's why.
Yeah.
And jerseys.
But whatever. That's the West Coast problem. Not my problem. As long as the Klubot keeps throwing, life is gonna be good.
I do like watching his starts when I get the chance.
Yeah. So let's talk about Pittsburgh, Chris. What's going on with Pittsburgh as we move on to the last month of the season?
Well, they are fighting in that division, and it looks like it's gonna shake up how I predicted. At least I shouldn't say that, but yeah, you know, that's kind of jinxing. But, I mean, I did say pretty emphatically at the beginning of the season that the Brewers would be good. They would surprise people, and so far they're surprising even me and outpacing my prediction. I picked the Cardinals to win that division. And I think the Pirates are going to finish above the Cardinals. I haven't checked the latest Baseball Prospectus end of season, you know, standings projections, but I can imagine it's pretty close between the Cardinals and the Pirates as it has been.
Yeah, and I know Jason Collette and Paul Sporer have to be really thrilled about this because Milwaukee was their sleeper pick at the beginning of the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, right now this is what they've got for the remainder of the season. Cardinals are going to go 14-12. The Brewers are 13-13. The Pirates are going to go 13-13. I mean, it's that close. And they're all, like, separated by what? Like, 3 games at the most right now, correct?
Right, yep.
It's going to be a nail-biter, which I hate. And then next year when the Cubs are awesome, God.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it right now, so you have St. Louis and Milwaukee atop the division at 73-63. And then Pittsburgh 2 games back at 71-65. It is a very, very tight race.
That's another reason that's so frustrating that, you know, Neil's not really, didn't really make any moves to, you know, bolster the roster in any way, specifically the rotation, even the bench, the lineup. Like, he didn't do anything. And I don't know if they really believe in some of the guys that are coming up, which I mean, I'm a fan of the team, so obviously I do to some extent, but, like, the Cubs are going to be ridiculous, and it doesn't look like the Cardinals are going to suck anytime soon, and the Brewers aren't going to suck anytime soon, so it's going to be, I mean, even the Reds aren't bad, I mean, they're underperforming this year, but, I mean, what do you think about next year? Look, I mean, the Cubs, I keep saying the Cubs, they're going to be so good, and that's just, I think that's a problem, and I just think that either they're willfully ignorant of that, or they really believe that, you know, signing that C-level free agent, you know, is going to actually help their young core. I just think that he really needed to make a splash, and I think he still does. I know I sound like some dumb talk radio host, but really,
yeah. I mean, if you
see is there.
If you look at the division, it's interesting to see because at this point in the season, I think anytime you get past the All-Star break, I like to look at run differential. And last season, St. Louis was like plus 110 runs or something ridiculous like that.
I might be
being hyperbolic there, but I don't think so. I mean, they were amazing last season. And now this season, you have St. Louis. Their run differential this season is -7. I mean, they just are not scoring runs.
Which bodes well for the Pirates, projection-wise, even though right now the Baseball Prospectus still has them at 66 for a playoff, and the Pirates at 32%, whereas the Brewers are 62. So, like I said, that's based on the projections, and I feel like if the Pirates would have made a splash, the gory math behind it would have improved their chances, but that doesn't factor in luck, injuries, all sorts of other random variations. But, you know, that's how it stands with the cold, hard math. The Cardinals, everyone still believes in the Cardinals based on their lineup and who they have.
Right. So if you were in Neil Huntington's shoes right now and you could make a move, who would you make a move for?
Well,
or I guess what position would you look to solidify for the last month of the season?
Honestly, bullpen and starting rotation. It makes me nervous that if they do make the playoffs, they're gonna they have Volquez and Locke in that rotation. Well, Locke's gonna come back up, but he got sent down. But still, I mean, I don't know if that makes anyone else nervous, but that makes me extremely nervous because they're performing so much better than they should be, and that's, you know, regression's going to hit them at the wrong time, and I feel like it'll be like the division series or something, or even the championship series if it comes to that. And I feel like he should have bolstered that or the bullpen, which is shaky as well.
Yeah, which that's really tough for me to stomach because the bullpen was so phenomenal last season. And this season, it's just, I mean, you look at the position that we're in right now. Imagine if Jason Greeley hadn't blown four games earlier in the year, or, you know, like Justin Wilson. I really don't understand Justin Wilson. I want to dig a little bit deeper into Justin Wilson's season and see what has happened this season that's made such a difference in his performance. But I mean, it's not his velocity, that's for sure. But, yeah, I mean, you look at that bullpen, and really it's just been Melanson just dragging everybody through the season. Pittsburgh...
What's surprising is he's usually the guy that makes me the most nervous.
Yeah. He's been lights out this season. He's been really, really consistent. You know, he's had a couple bumps, but, you know, every relief pitcher does. And
yeah. Based on what I'm seeing on Fangraphs, Wilson's just been extremely unlucky. His ERA being 4.3, whereas his FIP is 3.3. So I don't think much has changed besides luck, to tell you the God's honest truth. And I know that's the kind of a cop out, but truthfully, I mean, we have no way to explain it because you're right. His velocity isn't down, so that means there's probably no injury nagging him. I just think it's terrible luck.
I hope so, because, man, he was a lot of fun to watch last season, and this season it's been
not as
enjoyable. So, with rosters expanding, who do you think we have a chance to see that that Pittsburgh fans might not usually see?
I think we see Alan Hansen, who is... what was he ranked? The number 6 or 7 prospect at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, yep, we had him ranked. Definitely, I mean, he's a top 10 prospect anywhere you go. So
he's got lots of speed. He's got, I think, like at least 20 or 30 stolen bases in Double A this year. I haven't really checked. I should look. We'll definitely see him come up though. Not sure who else.
I know Hansen. Set. The biggest question on Hansen is going to be his defense. You know, that's been his thing since Pittsburgh has acquired him. You know, at first it was the arm. You know, like, last season, again, and I might be being hyperbolic, but I think he made, like, 70 errors. I mean, it was just an ungodly amount of errors that he made.
That's something they definitely have to work on. 25 stolen bases, though, is nice.
Yeah.
11 home runs. I'm surprised he didn't get called up to Indy yet. But you're right, there might be something holding him back like that, for example, his defense.
Yeah, his defense is the big thing. But if you look at Pittsburgh's bench, so you're looking at, we've got Michael Martinez and Brent Morrell coming in, and, I mean, Hansen has to be better than those guys.
I would agree. I mean, I would rather see him on the bench than those two knuckleheads, for sure.
Right.
Michael Martinez is sad. So, when he got signed, I thought it was interesting because, you know, he's kind of a utility guy, but he's just underperformed so badly. And I was really excited when they did sign him, not because he's a good player or anything, but because my mother's maiden name is Martinez. So she's always she's always you know, hoping the Pirates get somebody named Martinez. You know, she's originally from Michigan, so you know, with the Tigers having V-Mart, she's got her V-Mart jersey. But, so I was like, Mom, I'm not gonna get you a Michael Martinez jersey because I really don't think that's a good idea.
You'll get run out of whatever stadium you're in with that shirt on.
Yeah. So you know, as with any you know, mom, I guess she's kind of a fair weather fan when it comes to that stuff. Because I mean, when in the '90s, in the early 2000s, she loved the Yankees because of Tino Martinez and, you know, that sort of thing. So, but that was just a little aside. Sorry. But yeah, I think the biggest name we're going to see based on the 40 man is Alan Hansen. I'm actually excited to see Jeff Decker as well. Now, I know this isn't real life, but on Out of the Park Baseball, he ended up turning into like a 30-homer guy.
Oh, jeez.
Don't really know how that happened, but and what's ironic is the league expanded after 2014, and the expansion team, you know, you're supposed to protect your players, and then they have the expansion draft. And I didn't protect Jeff Decker because I was like, you know, my outfield's crowded. I've got Kutch, Marte, and Polanco. I don't really need him. Well, you know, he went to the Jacksonville Zombies, I think they were called, and he ended up being a perennial MVP and all-star for that team. Same with Tony Two-Bags, Tony Sanchez. I didn't protect him either because I re-signed Russell Martin, and he ended up becoming a perennial all-star. And I just, you know, that's a projection, but I think Jeff Decker is pretty good. I don't think he's that good, though.
No. Now, that's funny that you would bring up Russell Martin on there, and you virtually re-signing Russell Martin. What do you think the Pittsburgh Pirates should do with Russell Martin at the end of this season? Because his contract is up after this season.
This is another one of those things where I don't sense their urgency to win if they don't make a move like this and re-sign the guy. They got nothing in the minors. If they're going to roll with Chris Stewart and Tony Sanchez next year, I might not watch baseball because that's just going to piss me off. Now, he won't be cheap, but like I really think they should splurge and sign him just purely based on the run saved, the catch framing, you know. And I mean, if he hits, that's a bonus. The last couple of years, he's been worth 4 wins with the Pirates. His last 4 or 5 win season was in 2007 and 2008 with the Dodgers. Like he's playing at 2007 and 2008 level. That was six, seven years ago. So I think now they really should re-sign him. I mean, for the listeners out there, I will have a piece out soon on the site exploring this more, like, for example, how much he's could prospectively cost on a dollars per war basis. But that's another thing that's just going to be really frustrating to me if they don't re-sign him. They just let him walk away.
Well, now let me ask you this, because Russell Martin's going to be 31, or he is 31, he's going to be 32. Let me double check that. He's 31 or 32.
He is 31 and 6 months. 31 and a half.
Okay. So, the Yankees sign Brian McCann to a 5-year, $85 million contract this offseason. If there is a handful of teams out there that are willing to pay for a catcher, and they drive the price up for that market this offseason, Pittsburgh doesn't stand a chance, do they? Because
they don't.
I mean, they can't compete. I mean, you can't sign a 31-year-old catcher to a humongous contract. I mean, a $17 million, $15 million a year contract? Like, you can't do that.
I really think 2 years at an option or 3 years at the most for me to feel comfortable. Because by that third year, I mean, 34 years old, if you're playing catcher since, what, 2006 in the majors? Yeah, I think 2 years and an option would be smart, because with that option year, he could even hopefully we see Reese McGuire or Jin DeJiang, or I mean, I don't believe in Tony Sanchez one bit. I mean, he started taking reps at first base, which is promising, but I don't believe in him in any defense or offense. I just think he's a bust at this point, unfortunately. But like following him on Twitter though.
If so,
he's an 80 grade Twitter.
He is an awesome Twitter follower. He really, yeah, he's a lot of fun to follow on Twitter. But so I guess my underlying point is, if there's one team that's willing to go 5 years for Russell Martin, Pittsburgh doesn't stand a chance to re-sign him.
No.
And I mean, I think that's going to end up being the problem, is you're going to get a team like, maybe get a team like Detroit, who's done with Alex Avila, or, you know, maybe you get like the maybe he wants to go back to the Dodgers and you know.
Man, that's a team that does need a catcher.
Back closer to home, that needs a catcher, that they don't care that they can sign a player to a 5-year, $80 million contract.
That's actually a good look, the Dodgers, because they're not afraid to spend a ton of money, and they're not exactly deep at catcher. They got AJ and Butera, yeah, and Drew's Butera. The other guy.
So if you
Fedorovich.
If you get one team like that, the market's ruined. Yeah. And like you said, you know, if Pittsburgh is signing a player like Russell Martin to a contract, it has to be a 2 or 3 year deal at most, because you can't eat years 4 and 5 like that.
No. Where a team like the Dodgers, if they plan on signing a guy like Polanco,
right?
If they do reopen negotiations, you want to have that money saved down the line. I don't think they have a chance of re-signing or giving Cole some sort of extension, because he's a Boris client, one, and two, because he's a pitcher, and we discussed earlier, pitchers' prices have nowhere to go but up, especially good ones.
Right.
Even middling pitchers get paid a ton of money, and I just never understood it. But another thing with the projections and out of the park, I was able to re-sign Taillon and Cole for a number of years, I think through a Cutch's contract, and for some reason they took it. It wasn't very expensive, but it did hamstring me down the line.
Yeah.
Because of the Pirates, you know, they don't really have that's a great game. I feel like I'm advertising for them. They should pay me. It's addicting, but it's great because of how realistic it is, especially with the contracts. Like,
maybe
I'm a nerd. I love that kind of stuff.
Maybe we could get a sponsor for the show.
That's not a bad idea. I should write a review for the site, because they like that and they share that. They love that when people write reviews about their game.
Yeah, we should look into that. So, I guess the underlying thing with Russell Martin, I understand, and I want, you know, especially being like a guy, I love catchers. I mean, I think catchers are the most important part of a major league team, and having a good one, I think, makes the difference between winning more games than you lose. But with Russell Martin, I really don't think Pittsburgh is going to be able to re-sign him. I think they'll try, and we might not hear about it right away. You know, eventually I think it'll probably get out what we offered, but
like the AJ thing.
Right.
How they refuse to offer the qualifying, which at this point looks pretty smart, but at the same time, he's still kicking. I mean, he's not really dominant anymore, but he's still kicking.
Yeah. So, it'll be...
This is Bangkok, it's a hitter front park, too, so there's that.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle Russell Martin, and I think Pittsburgh's going to take a stab at re-signing him. I think ultimately, though, they just won't have the bank to re-sign him.
No, and I don't think Nutting would open up the purse to re-sign him either, because
yeah, that's
not how he operates.
That's definitely not his MO. So, let me ask you really quickly, what do you think is going to happen at third base going into next season?
I mean, the Sonny Rosie scenario is that Pedro ends up playing first base next year, and Jay Hay plays third. But, you know, like we were discussing with Chisenhall earlier, I mean, I think a lot of Jay Hay is going to go away next year. I don't think he continues to mash, and I also don't think I think he comes back down to super utility bench player. I don't think he's a starter, and that's a tough decision to make. Defensively, he is a hair better than Pedro, in my opinion. Actually, a little, probably more than a hair, because Pedro's pretty bad. But I've been saying for years that I'm like, hey, the Pirates have a first base problem. Why don't they move Pedro to first base? I don't know if it was his unwillingness, but he seemed to agree pretty willingly to do it. I don't know. I mean, I don't think Ike Davis is a long-term solution, and definitely don't think Lambeau. I like Andrew Lambeau, but we were discussing Matt LaPorta earlier, and he is definitely Matt LaPorta. He is quad A. Yeah, he kills triple A pitching, but when he's up in the majors, he looks lost, completely lost at the plate. And he, yeah, every now and then he's gonna mash a home run, but even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, and that's gonna be him. So I don't believe in him long term at first base. So I think next year they roll with Pedro at first and JA at third, and just see how it goes, and maybe hope for, I don't know, one of their prospects, or maybe they sign somebody cheap to play third if JA fails. And by cheap, I mean not Michael Martinez or Brent Morrill.
Oh, please, yeah. not that cheap.
Not that cheap. I'm talking somebody I should look at the potential free agents to see what they could do. But it's just, that's the thing about the Pirates front office. They're kind of maddening. They don't seem to act like a normal front office when it comes to signing stuff. And I think a lot of that's being hamstrung by ownership. And I know that makes me sound like a homer, but for real. Like, Bob Nutting, every time he saves a dollar, he grows a new chest hair. So that's why
he would have a very hairy chest if that were true.
Yeah, like, if you ever go to Pirates Fest, or any listeners out there go to Pirates Fest, and he's wandering around with his three buttons unbuttoned, it's just, he looks ridiculous. You're a West Virginia newspaper magnate. You're not, you know, a Grecian cruise line magnate.
Oh, that's funny. So, how do you think the end of the season is going to shape up for the Pirates? Do you think this team is a playoff team?
I think they make the playoffs. I think they sneak into the wild card again, but I don't think they're gonna go very far. And last year, I think was the year that was, they were surprising. I think they could have beaten the Dodgers in the NLCS. I know that's probably an unpopular opinion, but I think they could have, the way they were going. This year, I just don't think they have the pieces. I, you know, remember last summer, I think it was, not last summer, last fall, or even this winter, where I did the piece on re-signing Marlon Byrd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I should have sent that to Neil Huntington, because 25 home runs later, like, I mean, I know Polanco was the elephant in the room there, but seriously, could you imagine how much better the Pirates would have been with him in the lineup and in right field? Even at $17 million. I mean, they're paying that much for Russell Martin.
Right.
That's another thing. It's just, yeah, he's old, and yeah, he wanted a multi-year deal, I guess, but God, it would have been nice to have that much power in the lineup.
Yeah. You know?
He isn't a bad hitter, and that angers me.
as do a lot of things with the Pirates front office. Typically, that's.
Yeah.
But what are you gonna do? You can only play with the money that you are allotted. So.
Yeah, Monopoly style.
Got to work in those constraints, I suppose. So, anything else with Pittsburgh that you want to hit on today?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, we're going to move to a Seawolf shout-out, and this Seawolf shout-out it's kind of a special one. The Seawolf shout-out is going to be a little bit special because, for a multitude of reasons. First of all, Steven Moya was called up to Detroit, so he's on Detroit's active roster now, and Steven Moya hit his 35th home run and drove in his, I believe it was his 105th or 104th RBI, which means that he is now first on the all-time home run list and first on the single-season RBI list as well. So
yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. Like, for a double A season, I mean, that's
right. Well, and I was explaining to, we have a season ticket package with some of our friends up here, and so I was explaining to them why this is kind of a neat thing to get to see, and basically I told them, you know, like, a guy who hits like this in double A, usually they don't stick around long enough to accumulate all of these numbers.
So, yeah, usually they get called up.
Yeah, right. So it was kind of a special season to get to see Steven Moya do that.
All season, too. That's pretty cool.
Right, yeah. I mean, start to finish. I had a chance to go to the Eastern League All-Star game in Altoona this year, and I got to see him hit a home run into the lattice of the roller coaster in right field there as well.
The roller coaster.
he was so much fun to watch this season. I saw him hit two grand slams this season. A walk-off home run that he hit across Holland Street. I mean, he hit out of the park across the street.
Oh, my God.
He was a very, very entertaining player. Like, I felt I got my money out of my season tickets just by getting to watch Steven
Wilkins. Being able to watch him, yeah.
It was...
Before we go forward with the Seawolves anymore, I forgot to note that quick minor league news for the Pirates, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, get it.
The Jamestown Jammers are no longer the Jamestown Jammers. They will be the Morgantown whatever next year.
Yeah.
If the listeners didn't know that, I mean, Jamestown has been a franchise in the New York Penn League since, like, 1936 in some iteration or another. And this was their last season. It was recently broke that they're going to move to Morgantown because West Virginia University built a new facility for their baseball team. And they're going to share it, much like State College does with the Spikes, with the New York Penn League team of future creation. But, yeah, the Jammers are no more. So I would suggest everyone go and buy a Jammers hat before it's too late. I did. I ordered the blue one with the green set of grapes. For anybody who's interested in memorabilia and whatnot. But yeah, that's one little interesting tidbit I forgot to add. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, hey, no, that's fine. Yeah, that's kind of disappointing. And actually, we talked about this on one of the podcasts last year, because that was one of the things Bob Nutting had been talking about, was moving the team to West Virginia and how he'd been funneling money into that stadium. And everybody kind of saw the writing on the wall. And, yeah, it was officially announced the other day, which is, it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it is, but, I mean, what can you do? That's two Pirates affiliates in West Virginia now.
Yeah.
I mean, the furthest away is their AAA affiliate in Indianapolis. That's, everybody else is nearby. I mean, well, minus the Gulf Coast League, but you know what I mean. Right. And they just had the team in Bristol this year, which I didn't really keep that much close track of.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I didn't watch anything about the Bristol Pirates this season other than when their season started.
So, yeah. And their ridiculous-looking mascot. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, yeah, I guess you're going to have to get your short season ball down in West Virginia now, so.
Well, I can still go to Williamsport, thankfully.
Yeah.
Which is a great time. Great time. I mean, it's a nice field. It used to be just historic Bowman Field, but they sold the rights over to Susquehanna Bank this year, so it's Susquehanna Bank Park at Bowman Field.
It's interesting. We might have to have you do a Crosscutters update next season.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, they're a Phillies affiliate, but it's still a lot of good short season ball comes through there, and it's I mean, the level of play is, you know, they're working on things at that level, so it's interesting to see a lot of the pitchers, and you get great seats because it's short season,
right.
So you get sit right behind home plate, and you can watch the pitchers, you can watch the scouts, I don't know why I said cops, actually, you want to know why I said cops, it's because, full disclosure, we were at the game, and we mistakenly sat in the family section with beer, and don't ever do that.
They were not happy. That's funny. So back to the Seawolves, I guess, just one last thing that we wanted to touch upon, which could be our top weird story of the season. Thanks in part to Greg Coleman, the Seawolves general manager, who we had the pleasure of interviewing earlier this season. Greg Coleman went above and beyond his job description, and that's about as delicately as I can put it, as he accepted what is known as the two-knuckle challenge. Which stems from, I believe, and I don't have the full story in front of me, but basically a former Erie Seawolves general manager, who has moved on to another team, one of their, like, super fans from the team, passed away from prostate cancer, and so he agreed to, in honor of this fan, have a prostate exam done during a game, to kind of, you know, raise prostate awareness. So he extended the challenge to Greg Coleman, who accepted the challenge of singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the seventh inning stretch and having a prostate exam done at the same time. So there was a giant curtain draped over one of the booths during the...
You got video of this.
I did not get video, which I will regret.
Not of the prostate exam, but of the singing. I just
rather
invasive.
of the exam. So with the curtain draped, he's singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and as he's singing the song, you can see there's like a moment where he's singing like, take me out to the ball game, take me out with the, and his face just like scrunches up, and he hits like a like a way higher note than you should hit at that point in the song, and you could tell like that's the moment where the two knuckles, man, are.
Well, for him, that's it takes some huge balls to do something like that.
I mean, you could
in front of all those people too.
You could see him sweating. We were a couple rows in front of him, and you could there's just sweat. So the two knuckle challenge was accepted, and it was funny to see, and it was entertaining. Ultimately, it was for a very good, I guess, cause, as far as just, you know, prostate cancer awareness and all that. But kudos to Greg Coleman for keeping the fans entertained all season. Greg, it was a phenomenal season for the Erie Seawolves this season, and great job by your crew over there.
Yeah, the props to you guys. I'm gonna have to make out to a Seawolves game next year.
Yeah, it's definitely a howl of a good time.
I forgot to add this in my piece about the Little League World Series, but there was a guy wearing a Portland Sea Dogs hat at the Little League World Series, and I asked him, I was like, "Can you tell the difference between a sea wolf and a sea dog?" And seriously, a direct quote, he's like, "Who are the Erie Seawolves?" They have to play in the same league.
He had no idea.
I was like, come on, man. It's even an American League team affiliate. Like, but, yeah, that's one of those things where you see somebody. I mean, I wear my obscure minor league hats, you know, as a kind of an inside joke with some of my friends. And I thought he, you know, he wore obscure minor league hats, but he didn't know the Erie Seawolves, even though they were in the same league as the Portland Sea Dogs. Which, if Greg Coleman is listening, if he could explain to me the difference, somebody. I've been asking everyone I know.
We will. We'll get the answer to that this off season. We'll have a very clear thesis on the difference between the Sea Wolves and the Sea Dogs at some point. We'll get that addressed, definitely.
All right. Perfect.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up today. So we'd like to thank our listeners and ask, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you give us a rate and review. We'll be podcasting again kind of sporadically. I know we were a few weeks between this one and the last one, so just kind of keep your ear to the ground, and we'll let you know when we're recording next. In the meantime, if you want to check us out on the interwebs, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb, and you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So, for Chris Bradley, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.